Depending on whom you're listening to, President Obama's health care reform plan has been called too much or too little. But few people actually know most of the details of the law and how it will change health care and health insurance in this country. On this week's Please Explain, Washington Post correspondent T.R. Reid explains what the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act includes and what it doesn't, how much it will cost, and how much it saves. Mr. Reid's latest book is The Healing of America, Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. It's published by Penguin, and I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Reid back to our show. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Great to be back on your show. Thanks for having me.
I think the last time you were here, we were talking about Japan. Now we're talking about something very different.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure our listeners have plenty of questions. So we will be taking calls later at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. TR, what opponents are calling Obamacare is actually named the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, or PPACA. How revolutionary is it?
Oh, it's a major change in American health care, Leonard. It's the biggest change since Medicare was created in 1965. I think there's some question now whether how much of it will take effect, because the Republicans ran against it in this election, and they won. And even though the law is passed, and I don't think the Republicans can repeal it, it requires ongoing appropriations year after year, and President Obama can't make Congress spend that money. So if the Republicans want to defund Obamacare, they could do that.
Well, Democrats are claiming that one of the reasons that it's so vulnerable is people don't understand it. You actually wrote a book in which you looked over the bill and take it apart page by page?
Yeah, I actually tried to explain this bill in plain English. It took about 7 pages of the paperback version of my book, and I think I got it, yeah.
The law seeks to expand health care to cover more people, but it doesn't provide universal coverage, though.
Yeah, I think I can understand why people would like the bill. It does a lot of good things. It outlaws some of the cruelest practices of the insurance industry. Get this, Leonard, it creates an internet market, you know, like how you buy an airplane ticket or a hotel room on the internet. Any family in America will be able to go on the internet and choose from between five and 20 different health insurance plans. If you choose a plan that it's good for your family, the insurance company can't turn you down. And get this, if it costs more than 8% of your income, it's about $340 a month for the average worker, the government will subsidize the premium. Nobody knows that's in there, but for most Americans, that'll be a better choice at a better price for health insurance than they have now.
Who will remain uninsured?
Well, not people who are sick. People who are sick will finally be able to get insurance. The insurance companies can't turn them down. The people who remain uninsured are people who fall just above the poverty level, so they can't get, or the level that qualifies for Medicaid, the government-provided health insurance, but still can't afford to pay for a premium, and that's going to be in the range of 23 to 25 million Americans. And this is why people, progressives, kind of hate this bill, because it still leaves 25 million Americans uninsured 10 years from now. And as you know, this is the point of my book, all the other rich countries managed to cover everybody, and they spend half as much as we do on health care. The argument is we could have done that too, but Obamacare didn't do it.
Where does the funding for the expansion of Medicaid come from?
Well, the total, everything in the bill, including the subsidies for private insurance and Medicaid, and their funding these high-risk pools in the state for people who couldn't get insurance before, it's going to be about $940 billion. At least that's the official Congressional Budget Office estimate. The Republicans think it's higher. And that's all paid for. In this bill, there's $940 billion in new taxes, and it's pretty intelligently planned in that the taxes money comes mainly from people who are big winners through our healthcare system, insurance companies, hospital companies, and drug companies. They're going to pay the bulk of the price.
So will the law be able to lower the cost of health insurance, as its proponents claim?
Well, it'll lower the cost of insurance for most American families because a lot of them are going to get a subsidy from the government, but then the government's going to be paying the bill. Over time, you know, over 7 or 8 years, if they put in the cost controls, there are cost controls in the bill. It would cut costs, but if they don't enforce the cost controls, and we've never been able to do that in our country, then no, insurance costs will continue to go up.
One of the first things to go into effect is allowing adult children to remain on the parents' plans longer. Why was that put in earlier than some of the other clauses?
I think the Democrats did that because they wanted some of the goodies in the bill to take effect for the 2010 election. And the bad part, the tax increases, as I said, on those big companies and on rich people, there's higher taxes on Medicare for rich people. They don't take effect for two more years. And I think the idea is front load the sweet and put off the vegetables until later.
My guest is T.R. Reid. He's written a book called The Healing of America, Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. And in it, he also has an explanation of the 2010 health care reform bill. It's published by Penguin. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Does the bill require all employers to provide health care insurance for their employees?
Anybody with more than 49 employers has a choice. Either you got to provide health insurance or you got to pay $2,000 per employee to the government, which will then subsidize their health insurance. My guess is a lot of small employers are paying more than $2,000 a year per employee now, and they'll just pay the penalty. And that will drive lots of people to this internet market that I described for you, where you can go on the net, and depending on what state you live in, you can choose at least 5. In some states, it'll be 20 different insurance plans. To me, that's a good deal. I mean, you know, I work for a big company. I have a choice of one plan, like many Americans do. I'd rather have the choice. So to me, that's a good part of the bill, and it's something the Democrats never explained. In Obama talk, this is called an insurance exchange. An insurance exchange sounds to me like some big building downtown where you go, you know, down a bunch of quarters and buy stuff. No, you do this on the internet. It's just like buying an airplane ticket.
But it's an online
market. They never explained that.
I'm unclear about it. You work for the Washington Post. They already have a health care plan. Would you just dump your Washington Post health care plan and go searching for a different one on the market? Would the Post help you pay for that?
My employer, if they want to provide me care, can still provide me health insurance. But I think most employers, and I think particularly newspapers, which are hurting at the moment, will probably pay the penalty instead and let people go to this internet market. And as I say, for me personally, I think it would be better because I don't live in Washington. I'm in Colorado. I only get one choice. I get a lot more choices and probably lower prices if I could use this internet market. So I just don't understand why that hasn't been explained to people. When you stand in a room and say to people, would you like to go on the internet and have a choice of 20 insurance plans and have the government subsidize the premium, people say, yeah, it's not a bad plan. That's in Obamacare, but nobody seems to know it.
The law includes stronger regulation of the insurance industry. What are those regulations?
Well, I think there are a lot of good rules there. Basically, the insurers have come up with various mechanisms to avoid paying for your health care. For one thing, they don't want to cover anybody who was ever sick, you know, because those people, they might make a claim. They don't want that. That's now going to be outlawed. The insurers will have to cover anybody. So you pick a plan for your family on the internet, and the company has to sell it to you. They can't put on a yearly limit or a lifetime limit on how much they pay. What happens now is a lot of plans, they look great. You know, they have $800,000 limit on claims. Boy, how am I going to spend that much? You know, Leonard, one auto accident can easily be $1.5 million in hospital bills, and they cut off people while they're in the hospital, and then you're stuck with the bill. This is one of the reasons we have such a high rate of medical bankruptcies. That's banned now. The insurance companies have this, I think, reprehensible practice called rescission, where if you get hit by a truck or you get cancer or something, they look for a reason to cancel your policy, even if you've been paying your premium, and they do that to hundreds of thousands of people. That's now banned. That's banned already this year. So a lot of these practices that the insurers use to avoid paying bills have been banned. The one they didn't ban is the insurers can still go through and deny a claim. In most countries where there's private insurance, they have to pay any claim that's certified by a doctor or hospital. But American insurers will still be allowed to deny claims. But a lot of the stuff they used to do to avoid paying has been outlawed.
But the guarantee issue doesn't go into effect until 2014.
Yeah, that's right. And here's the issue. If the insurers are going to have to cover everybody, sick or well, which I think they should, then the only way that can work is if everybody, sick or well, has to buy insurance. This is a basic element of insurance business. It's called risk pooling. You get everybody paying in, and only a few people get sick, and that provides enough money to pay their bills. What's happened is a bunch of Republican attorney generals, 20 of them, have gone to court challenging the mandate that everybody buy insurance. They say it's unconstitutional. Well, if there's no requirement that everybody buy insurance, then the insurance companies can't cover everybody, because here's what will happen. People will wait. They won't buy insurance. And then once they get a diagnosis of cancer, then they'll sign up for the insurance plan. And that wrecks the insurance company's bottom line. They can't make any money that way. So you have to have both. If you're going to have everybody gets insurance, then everybody can get insurance, and everybody has to get insurance. Those two, in every other country, those two go together. And those two are both required in Obamacare. If the Republicans succeed in killing the mandate to buy insurance, then the insurance companies can't cover everybody, and the whole plan kind of collapses.
A listener, Sophia in Yonkers, wrote in, "I'm a student of Christian Science. I don't intend to hire a medical doctor. Does the health care bill infringe on my religious freedom?"
No. If you can show that you have a genuine religious objection to buying health care, you don't have to buy health insurance.
So those are the only people who are exempted from this?
Well, they also wrote in this, I think, ridiculous clause that says if you can prove that your life has no impact whatsoever on interstate commerce, you don't have to buy insurance. They put that in there because they were looking out for lawsuits. But in fact, everybody in America has some impact on interstate commerce. There's nobody who only buys goods or products made in their own state. And therefore, it really doesn't mean anything. But yeah, if you have a religious objection, or if you can show that you're too poor to pay for insurance but can't qualify for Medicaid, that's the 25 million people who can go without insurance, even under Obamacare.
Does the new Health Care Reform Act change Medicare costs?
Well, in theory it does, but Congress never has the guts to cut Medicare costs. Here's what it does. For one thing, it eliminates over time, it gradually eliminates these programs called Medicare Advantage. Medicare Advantage is a program where a private insurance company, you buy insurance from, you know, Aetna or WellPoint, a private insurance company, and then they provide the Medicare benefits. And this was originally set up because the private insurers said they could do this more efficiently than Medicare. Initially, they were going to get 95% of what a Medicare patient pays, and then provide care. That was a good deal for the government. But, of course, over time, they keep coming back to Congress and saying, we want a little more, and now these private Medicare Advantage plans cost 114% of the cost of Medicare. They cost tens of billions a year for taxpayers to subsidize these. And those are going to be now eliminated. They're going to eliminate the subsidy, and without the subsidy, the companies won't provide Medicare Advantage. So if you're one of the seniors who has one of these really good deal plans, you're going to lose the good deal because we're not going to subsidize them anymore. For most people, Medicare benefits will be better. They're going to provide more benefits. Costs, I think, will probably go up, and particularly for rich people. They're going to skew the premium higher for rich people. So, yeah, Medicare will cost more. Now, there is a mechanism in there to cut doctor and hospital bills so that Medicare pays less, but Congress never has the courage to enforce those. They just yesterday agreed that they would get rid of the ban of the cut that was going to take effect in January. You know, Leonard, this is an area where everybody wants to cut government spending until you get down and actually cut government spending on Medicare, and then everybody complains about it.
The unions were concerned about the tax on the so-called gold-plated plans. Did that remain in the bill?
Yeah. There is still a tax on gold-plated plans, but it doesn't take effect until 2019, and they did that specifically to buy off the union. So in practice, that tax will never take effect. Congress will take another look at it before they get there.
John Boehner has called for a repeal of the law because he says we have the best medical system in the world as it is. Your book compares health care around the world, and how do you compare it with the rest of the world?
We don't have the best medical system in the world, but I think John Boehner does. You know, members of Congress have given themselves fabulous health insurance. They get a choice of 32 different plans. I wonder how many of your listeners can choose from 32 different plans. The taxpayers pay 75% of their premium, and get this, if they don't like all that, they can go to Bethesda Naval Hospital or any other military hospital and get treated. No, Congress has, John Boehner's right. If you're a member of Congress, you get the best care in the world. The problem in America is 50.7 million people don't have insurance, and those people generally don't get care until they're sick enough to go to the emergency room. In contrast, all the other industrialized democracies, you know, free market rich countries like us, all of them provide health care coverage for everybody. And this is what the interesting point I make in my book. They cover everybody, but they spend half as much on health care as we do, and they have better results. They live longer. They have better recovery rates from major diseases. They keep newborn babies alive. They do a better job of that. We do not have the best healthcare system in the world unless you're the Speaker of the House, and those guys have taken great care of themselves.
The World Health Organization has ranked all of the industrialized nations. France comes in number one. Where does the U.S. come in?
In that very controversial ranking, the U.S. ranked 37th, and that's mainly because of all the people for whom we don't provide care. You know, according to the National Academy of Sciences, about 25,000 of our fellow Americans die every year of treatable diseases because they can't afford a doctor, and that's why the World Health Organization ranked us so low. I think a more trusted ranking is done right in New York by the Commonwealth Fund in New York. They do these national scorecards, and generally they rate us very low as well against the other rich countries. They say the United States has better health care than third world countries, poor countries, but against the 23 richest countries, we rank between 19th and 23rd on most comparative rankings. So, no, we're the richest, most powerful country in the world, but when it comes to health care, we're a second-rate power at best.
In the United States, 700,000 people a year declare bankruptcy due to high medical bills. Does this happen in other Western democracies?
No. No other country lets that happen. The number of medical bankruptcies in Britain, zero. Germany, zero. France, zero. Japan, zero. Canada, zero. Other countries don't let this happen. And the argument of my book is we don't either. I mean, if we had the will to provide health care coverage for everybody, the other countries can show us how to do it and save money, because they all do.
My guest is T.R. Reid, a longtime correspondent for The Washington Post. His latest book is called The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Health Care. And it has an explanation of the 2010 health reform bill. It's published by Penguin. We will be taking your calls about what's in that bill and also dealing with some of your comments that you sent to our show page at WNYC.org right after this. We're back with T.R. Reid, whose book, The Healing of America, was a New York Times bestseller, now with an explanation of the 2010 health reform bill published by Penguin. And we are taking your calls on today's Please Explain at 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's go to the first of those calls. Tom from Seabright, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Mr. Reed, I read your book, and it was great, and I think it was really a powerful indictment of our country. And I want to focus, you know, your main point was that it's really a moral issue whether or not we provide universal health care. And I think, and do you find that Obama's plan has really made it impossible that it's going to further entrench the medical industrial complex into providing this and make it much less likely that we'll ever have a universal health care plan like, say, France or even England or Switzerland or Taiwan.
Or Canada.
Or Canada.
Okay. TR?
Hey, thanks for reading my book. And, yes, you absolutely got the message. The argument on my book is that it's a moral commitment. It's a moral decision whether you cover everybody or not. And all the other rich countries have made that moral commitment. We haven't. So does Obamacare mean that we never will? No, I don't think that's right. The new Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, expands coverage. It will get about 32 million more Americans covered than are covered now. But it still, as we said, doesn't get there. It leaves about 20 to 25 million people uninsured 9 years from now. So it's not really the answer. So here's the question. President Obama said, well, this is an important stepping stone on the route to universal coverage. If that's true, then, yeah, we'll get there. I'm afraid a lot of people see it as the end. We've done health care now, and too bad about those 25 million people, in which case we don't get there. And, of course, as I said earlier, I think the Republicans, they ran against Obamacare, and they won, so they're determined to defund it. So I'm not sure that we'll ever get the 32 million people expanded coverage for 32 million people that Obamacare contemplates, because I don't think the money will be there to finance this reform.
A listener in Brooklyn asks, what's the name of the new internet healthcare exchange that you mentioned earlier? When does it go into effect? And another listener asks, won't these exchanges just end up offering inferior healthcare?
Yeah, those are good questions. The internet exchanges will start in 2014, so you'll probably be able to go on and start buying from them in about October of 2013. And each state is going to have its own exchange. There was a proposal that there be one national exchange so every American had the same choice, but that didn't pass. That was considered too much federal control. So each state, New York, New Jersey, et cetera, will have its own and will give their exchange their own name. In Massachusetts, there is one already. It's called the Connector, and you can just go on the website and find it.
Isn't this bill to some degree based on what Massachusetts enacted, in fact, when Mitt Romney was the governor?
Yeah, to me it looks a lot like the Massachusetts plan in that it requires everybody to have insurance, it requires the insurance companies to sell you a plan, and it relies primarily on private insurance. It's not a government-run plan, and that online marketplace I'm telling you about, which Obama calls the exchange, that's the Massachusetts connector. It's exactly the same. The interesting thing is Mitt Romney now says he never liked this plan and he's against it. But really, the Obamacare plan is an adoption of his idea.
Well, how's it working in Massachusetts? When Scott Brown ran for the Senate, he ran against Obamacare.
He ran against Obamacare, but he voted for RomneyCare for the Massachusetts plan. And he's always said he wants to sustain the Massachusetts plan, and the reason is it's quite popular. About 80% of people in Massachusetts say it's better than what they had before. I don't know that anybody says it's perfect. They're at 98% coverage. That's definitely the highest state in the country in terms of insurance coverage, and costs have gone up. They haven't controlled costs, but get this, Leonard. Costs in Massachusetts, insurance premiums in Massachusetts have gone up at half the rate of most other states. That is, there's no state where insurance premiums are going down, but in Massachusetts they've gone up a little slower than other places, and that's partly because in order to get on to the online marketplace, you have to meet certain cost control requirements set by the state. other states will be able to do that too. So I think it's quite possible that this online exchange under Obamacare, if it happens, and as I said, I'm not sure it's going to happen, will in fact lead to smaller increases in premiums. It's not going to bring premiums down because health care keeps going up, but I think the increase rate will be lower because of this system.
It keeps on going up partly because American hospitals and doctors and medical research may be the most advanced in the world, and we depend on it, and it's expensive. No?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. We pay more for all medical procedures and all drugs than people in all the other rich countries. You know, in my book, I was looking for a cure for my shoulder, and my doctor in America recommended an operation would have cost about $44,000. The identical operation in France would have cost me $5,000. That just means the doctors and the hospitals make less in those countries. And, yeah, that is a key reason why our system is so expensive. But I think the more important reason is just the administrative costs. There's so much paperwork, and there's so many conflicting systems in America. You know, I'm on the board of a hospital, and we do, like, 60 hernia repairs a week, and we get 60 different prices for it, and we have to use 60 different forms to get paid. So if you could simplify that, as all the other countries have, we could save hundreds of billions of dollars. I think that's a major reason why we have to pay so much more.
Georgina from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, I had a comment about T.R. Reid's particular situation, which is that the Washington Post provides health care to him, and he pays X percentage of the premium, I'm sure, as most employees do, whatever that is, 20%, 30%. If when Obamacare goes into effect, then you're going to, you said Washington Post will no longer provide health care for their employees, most likely. So they're going to pay $2,000 per employee to the government, and then you're going to be able to choose, you know, from a cap, you know, a series of plans. But then you're going to have to pay 8% of your income towards your health care premium, which is a lot more than you're paying right now.
Yeah, let me think about that. 8% would be it might be more.
It's significantly more. It's significantly
yeah,
more.
So
therefore,
so?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you do the math, this is something that people don't acknowledge, which is that in one of the reasons Republicans are so upset about Obamacare is it means we're going to have to pay a whole lot more money personally out of our pockets for our own health care, and you are going to have to do the same thing, even though you're lauding the plan.
What do you have a pre-existing condition, Georgina? One of the big concerns that the president had and that many people have is that they, even if they're paying insurance, they often get denied payment for one reason or another. It's happened to me a few times.
You know that in New York, you know, first of all, insurance regulations, health insurance regulations vary from state to state. And in New York State, you're not allowed to not cover someone because of a pre-existing condition. Are you aware of that?
Well, if that's the case in New York State, well, then I'm glad I live here, but I better
not
move, right?
Exactly, and that's one of the reasons.
But Georgina is right. You pay more.
One of the reasons we have such a mixed up healthcare system in this country is because it's regulated state to state and not regulated federally. And this Obamacare does not cover that problem.
TR.
Well, that's right. That was the proposal, was to have a national insurance exchange where all the insurers would have been regulated by federal rules, but that didn't pass, and so there are going to be state exchanges. I think she's right. I think this argument that we should be able to buy insurance plans across state lines or nationally, it makes a lot of sense. In every other country, that's the case. But, you know, we have this federalist tradition, and also the insurance companies have more lobbying clout over state regulators than they feel they would over federal regulators. So they like it that way, too. I don't agree, Georgina, that every plan on the online market will be more expensive than what I've got now. There's going to be a range of plans. Obamacare requires a minimum of 5, and many states are already looking at having 20 different plans. So I think there will be cheaper plans available. That would be my bet anyway.
Stephen asked on Facebook, is there some kind of penalty or fine for individuals for not being covered. I've heard different things about this, and I'm still confused, he writes.
Yeah, it's a really good question. The law is you have to buy health insurance under Obamacare. This is what the Republicans are complaining about. Unfortunately, Congress flinched. They blinked when it came time to enforce that. So they put in a fine, which will increase your federal income tax bill. But it's pretty small. I think it's in the range of $700 a year, and almost everybody has to pay more than $700 a year for health insurance. So I think a lot of people will choose to pay the fine and not buy insurance. And, of course, what's going to happen then is over time, presumably, Congress will increase the fine. But, yeah, the rule is as of 2014, if you don't have health insurance, you're going to have to pay a fine, which will come in the form of a supplement to your federal income tax payment. But still, I think a lot of people will choose to pay the fine because it's too low. It's not going to force people to buy health insurance, and that was supposed to be the plan.
Carol from Red Bank, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, my employer in our open enrollment healthcare benefits program said that our double-digit increase in premiums was due to the health care bill that just recently passed. And I was wondering if there's any truth at all to that. I mean, I think that the double-digit part is definitely false, but, I mean, is there any increase at all due to this new plan?
Yeah, I think that argument is baloney, too. They always raise rates, and they always blame somebody, and Obamacare is such an easy target for them to blame. For one thing, most of the burden on insurance companies from Obamacare hasn't taken effect yet. Second, the insurance commissioner in Colorado just did a study because the companies in Colorado came in with 20 to 30% premium increases. And she concluded that the cost of the new law were between 0.25% and 1%, and the other 28% increase was due to other factors. So I think the argument, gee, we're raising your rates because of the new federal reform law, I think that's baloney. I don't think that bears out.
We have very little time left, but a number of people are asking the same question, and that is, will I be able to go to any doctor I choose? Because that was a major issue during the recent campaign.
Yeah, no, the answer is no. Because the insurance company, at one point in the debate over Obamacare, the members of Congress tried to eliminate this in-network, out-of-network system that the insurers have set up, which saves them money but is not so good for patient choice. And that didn't pass. So the insurers are still going to be allowed to limit which doctors you can go to. If you're on Medicare, you can go to any doctor as long as they take Medicare. If you're on Medicaid, you can go to any doctor, but many doctors won't take Medicaid patients because Medicaid pays so little. But in private insurance, no, it's quite possible that your private insurance company will have this in-network thing.
TR, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being on today's Please Explain. His book, The Healing of America, published now in paperback by Penguin. It's been a pleasure talking with you today.
Leonard, great to be back on the show. Thank you.